Okay, folks, we're going to have an interview now, as I anticipated at the beginning of the program. Usually on RAE, every now and then we have some guests as part of this cycle in which we interview people with some kind of connection to Argentina, foreigners in Argentina or foreigners and Argentina. And today we've got Susan Harris. Hello, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
She came to the studio and she is from?
Originally from Malawi.
Malawi.
Yes, but also I grew up in the UK.
Okay, I can see, I can notice by the accent. Well, Susan, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself in a nutshell? I mean, what's your background and how you ended up in Argentina?
I think I'll start with the last. Well, I'm actually married to an Argentine. He's actually from Buenos Aires, as they call him, a porteño.
Yeah.
We actually were living in Hong Kong for the last 4 years.
That's where you met?
Yes, we met in Hong Kong. I was doing my PhD in media.
And he was?
And he was a videographer.
Yes. A videographer?
Yes. So we're both in the media, but in completely different parallel parts. And before that, I've been working in the human rights sector and the media. So working protection of journalists for over 10 years now. And that's what I currently do now.
Protection of journalists?
Yes, and it's a freedom of expression.
Ah, in not, not physical protection.
No.
You don't say
no,
bodyguards.
No.
Talking about rights.
Yes,
the rights.
Activism.
Well, that's quite an issue.
Yes, it is. And especially in the countries that I've worked in, whether it be
such
from,
as?
Philippines, Zimbabwe, Mexico. So many countries that we call closed societies that don't have open democracy.
You consider Mexico to be one of those?
Unfortunately, when it comes to protection of journalists, yes.
Why?
Because we...
Because, I mean, I'll tell you why I'm asking this. Mexico is currently, or over the past few years, especially in certain Argentine press, has been portrayed as a country with a more and more open economy.
Mm-hmm.
Or a country... I mean, those are the countries of the Pacific Alliance. You know what
yes.
they are? Peru, Mexico, Chile, and Colombia. Those are the countries where the economies are supposedly more open, and they are the model to follow, according to some. And usually you want what you would think, open economies go hand in hand with open societies, but you're telling me that it's not the case, at least for journalists.
Yes, I mean, I think that a lot of people, if you look at democracy in many parts of the world, the idea of having freedom of expression, the freedom that media comes with, does not automatically translate just because you have an open market. Mm-hmm. You can see that in many countries, and I think that's the sort of illusion, but that's the ideal that, you know, many governments want to, you know, happen in the future. But unfortunately, it doesn't always happen. You have so many different sectors, and the government is not the only powerful body in a country. There's many different...
That's such a big issue.
Yeah, and they're the ones that obviously are protecting their interests.
Well, I'm guessing in Mexico, you have the drug cartels
exactly.
practically contesting with the state for control of large portions of territory.
Yes.
Is that so?
I wouldn't want to speak... particularly on that issue, I'm not that familiar, but it's a general where the places I've been working have had happened. That's happened.
So, and what does it entail? I mean, to be a journalist in a closed society, how do you do your job?
Well, we actually do a lot.
How do you help them do their job in in a country like Mexico, for example?
We deliver training, safety training, whether it be how to ensure that they have their rights protected and make sure that they can continue doing their job in an environment that is very chaotic. We work and also give funding, whether it be different organizations that I've worked with, to ensure that they can deliver certain activities that they want to carry out, but again, in the most safe and protectedest way possible.
Anonymous, I suppose. A lot of anonymity involved to protect their identity or...
Sometimes, yes. It depends on the country and depends on the context. But again, the idea is that we try and support journalists working in different areas and just making sure that they can do their job.
Mm-hmm. So this is only for... Because another topic to discuss, I mean, we are going currently through a phase in which the whole concept of journalism is, or a journalist, a professional journalist, is being debated. I don't know if you agree. I mean, with social media, some might say that it's a profession destined to change or die. I don't know. It's a discussion. It's an ongoing discussion that I find interesting. So do we consider those deserving protection were professional journalists or anybody spreading information, like a blogger?
No. We were yes, absolutely. Well, we did. I've worked with an organisation that have different aspects for this. I've also worked with young activists and bloggers to make sure that they also have their part. And if it's called a democracy, then they should also have their voices heard. But making sure that they stand to the ethics of what journalists who have studied or practiced in the field. We work mainly. I have worked in the past with investigative journalists. Now, these are obviously the creme of the creme of journalist professions. Mm-hmm. But again, there's also those we cannot consider, because I don't believe that, people said, oh, a blogger is a journalist. We have to respect the profession. They go to university. They have to learn.
You stand with that.
Yes. But they still have their opportunity to have their freedom of expression delivered.
I think it's an interesting debate because yes, you have to. There is no doubt that a professional trained journalist provides better information because of the training. Mm. Because I mean, if they stand by the standards of formal journalism, I'm positive they're going to provide a better picture of a certain situation. But when it comes to freedom of expression, you can't be everywhere. Mm-hmm. And sometimes just a person informing without the slightest training is doing a job that is necessary for the world. So it's an interesting debate. Yeah. I think it is. So going back to your background, you were born and raised in Malawi.
No, I was actually born in the UK. It's a very long story. My parents met during the apartheid era in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, as you can imagine, an African of a black-skinned African was not allowed to marry a white foreigner, mm-hmm. even though my father was raised in Zimbabwe at the time, which was then Rhodesia, mm-hmm. which, funny enough, Argentina has a chocolate bar called Rhodesia, which is very strange for me.
This is don't worry about it. You're not the first to point that out. Yeah, but very few people know the story behind it. Very few,
or even know the country existed before.
absolutely. I mean, it's an infamous thing, but very few people are familiar with Cecil Rhodes.
Yes,
and the story, and nobody associates
the
cookie, the chocolate bar with it.
That connection, historical connection. Mm. So yes, unfortunately, my parents were kicked out of Malawi in the 1970s when there was a dictatorship there.
They were kicked out?
Yes, by the government. So my parents fled to Zambia and then eventually to UK. I was born there. Unfortunately, my father passed away and I came back to Malawi. So I was raised
with
there.
With your mother?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we were raised there for our early... Well, I was the last born. I was raised there for my primary years. And then back to the UK because unfortunately, as you can imagine, the 1980s in many parts of Africa... English education was the creme de creme of education systems, probably globally. So my father always wanted us to have a British education, hence my name and my English accent.
And you went back with your family to the UK.
Yeah. But funny enough, in this turn of events, we might be going back there with my husband. So.
To Malawi?
Yes, that's where I've always wanted to go back to. So, because unfortunately...
Do you go frequently there to visit?
At the moment, no. The last time I was there was when I was doing my research for my PhD. But before that, every sort of 3 years, because it's very expensive to fly, especially when I was in China. Yeah. And now from here, it's incredibly expensive.
From here, I suppose it's even more expensive. You have to fly to Europe.
Joburg.
To South Africa.
Yeah.
To South Africa. How long is the flight from Joburg to Malawi?
Oh, no, like 4 or 5 hours. So that's... And luckily, my nephew actually does that flight.
Really?
He's actually a pilot.
Oh, really?
I'm very proud.
The Buenos Aires...
No, Joburg to Malawi.
And then Hong Kong. I mean, you're certainly a citizen of the world.
Yeah.
That was quite an experience. How many years you spent there in Hong Kong?
Cuatro años.
Cuatro años.
Yeah. Obviously, I was there to do my PhD, so I was pretty much stuck there. as anyone has done it.
Well, that's another issue to discuss. I mean, going back to media, what about China? What about Hong Kong?
Ooh.
How does media work there?
You know what? I couldn't have chose a better time to go.
Because there were certain... in Hong Kong back then, a couple of years ago, some...
The umbrella movement. Yes. So this was a great time to sort of really study the media. Me and my husband were there in the protest. It was an incredible time because a lot of people see Hong Kong as just this business hub and nothing else. But to see a million people go and say, we want democracy, we don't want to be part of China, was an incredible thing to witness. But on side of that, in the media regard, we knew that, I won't say the certain newspapers that are going more pro-Beijing. And this has also caused an uproar against many sort of local citizens there. It was very fascinating to know that even those who are now becoming the editors in certain newspapers, radios, are actually appointed from China. So all these things are sort of slowly sort of making an impact.
What about the opposing view? Does that still have a presence in Hong Kong? Because that would, I mean, there's no problem if there are more pro-Beijing papers, as long as you have anti-Beijing papers still running.
Yeah, well, that's one of the problems. One of the sort of leading... So I can say foreign papers, those who maybe you're listening will know which one I'm talking about, have been, you know, having more of a sort of slant towards pro-Beijing stance. And, you know, it's fine. I mean, there's still going to be the alternative media. There's always going to be that. It has a thriving media in Hong Kong. It's just that you see these slight developments in certain newspapers that you sort of always known as and respected that are sort of changing their stance. And that is, you know, making a lot of locals upset and those who read that paper.
But that's Hong Kong. You've been to continental China? You've been to continental
China? Yes. Sorry, we didn't say continental. We sort of say mainland. And I was
mainland.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Mainland China.
Yes.
But the situation is completely different there.
Yeah, it's such a strange place. I mean, I love China. It's incredible. I've been to many regions in many provinces in China, and you don't get the sense that the international media give when it's like, oh, this, you know, horrible authoritarian country and, you know, this communist state. You don't get that on a day-to-day basis. Obviously, there is certain restrictions there on the media, and they have a propaganda department which is probably bigger than most small countries in
the
world.
There's a firewall on internet. There is no YouTube. I mean, you can Google Tiananmen Square protest.
But they have their own... You know, their own sources of information.
So they can.
Yeah, there's ways. I mean, you've got lots of people, not just to say, oh, China's got loads of hackers. It's not. They have alternative ways of getting their information. Mm-hmm. You know, they have Weibo, for example, which is like their Twitter. And so they, you know, yes, it is restricted in some ways. It's, you know, for me, China's such a complex place. It's huge. I mean, you have 1 billion people. How do you control it in some ways?
More than 1 billion. 1.6 billion.
Yeah. So imagine you being the leader of a country like that. You have to have some. Again, people use other alternative, what they called, I've lost my track, VPNs and other ways to get...
Other ways to circumvent the restrictions.
Exactly. So, you know, it's kind of like, yes, it's restricted, but it's no at the same time if you're smart enough. Mm-hmm. And most Chinese are quite very smart when it comes to wanting something. So I would probably say that, yes, they're restricted. Yeah, it's Facebook. But actually, if you're going back to what we were discussing earlier, Facebook, is it really this social platform? Or is it actually making more people have alter egos or the opposite? There or then no, being antisocial?
Is that a question?
Exactly.
I can already give you the answer.
It was rhetorical.
I mean, I remember when I was studied. I was studied at school at university a couple of years ago, and it was the at least here in Argentina we were beginning to see preview these changes that internet and international and universal information, immediate access to information would bring upon, and you couldn't see it any other way than people are going to be smarter because they're going to have more access. And it was the opposite.
Exactly.
I mean, people are using this freedom to close their minds even further.
Yes.
Nobody's exposing themselves to opposing views, but rather looking for peer-like to people who are
like-minded.
Thinking the same. Yeah, like-minded people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is sad. Well, and what about Argentina? I mean, the turns of life from Hong Kong to Argentina. What did you know before meeting your... your husband now.
This is going to sound really shallow, but this is what international news does. Pretty much Maradona and Messi is pretty much what
they are the ambassadors.
And Perón, of course, and things. But
Perón, well, yeah, if you add Perón to that list, it means that you have some interest in politics and history. But yeah, I mean, that basically the idea that anybody outside Latin America has about Argentina.
Yeah, it's very limited. I actually had an Argentinian economist teacher in my undergraduate years. So that was the first interaction.
In the UK?
In London. Mm-hmm. And she was very shocked by the British parliamentary system. But then I had no clue what an Argentinian political system looked like. So now I can kind of understand what the disparities are.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it is a 180 turn compared to being Asia, now in Latin America, and, you know, moving
to Africa.
Have
you been to Latin America before?
Yeah. I've been in Brazil, Cuba, and Mexico. Mm-hmm. So, but different, very different compared to Argentina. Very different.
And you guys decided to settle down in Argentina for a while. Why?
That was the initial plan, but I can't believe I'm saying this on air, but I've just been offered a job back in Tanzania, beautiful part of the world. So we are possibly moving there now, so it's all continents.
Your partner, your husband, can I suppose he can work remotely?
He's a freelance.
Freelance.
These are the questions you always have to think when you move to another country when you are married. But you know, if that's where you want to be together, so you have to just join hands and go, all right, let's jump in this and see.
And how long have you been in Argentina so far?
Only 3 months.
Oh well, but that's pretty much. I mean, you have open. You have an open mind, you have experience. What can you tell me, I mean, in these 3 months, your opinions, your analysis of media reality, media/politics, in my opinion, are the same.
Yeah, they do go hand in hand. It's been an interesting 3 months, to be honest with you. My analysis, when I first turned on the TV, it was a shock.
Why?
I think, to be brutally honest,
that's what we're here for.
Sorry, listeners of Argentina, but I think I worked in an organization with media ethics, and for me to have this kind of in-your-face, very
bias.
Yes, that is. Again, I don't think any media centers not been biased these days, but even the projection of the presenters, very flamboyant ladies, shall I say. I'm not used to. I come from very conservative countries where I'm not
flamboyant
used to.
Flamboyant in the way they dress.
Yes, their sort of persona is kind of this very, it's kind of like Pamela Anderson back in the, you know, when she was watching Baywatch in the 90s. And to have that as a news person, it was like, I didn't know if it was a news or if it was some TV show. And then when I asked my husband and his family, he said, no, this is the news. So my eyes popped out of my head.
Yeah, that's been a trend for a couple of years.
Yeah. And then also I think it's the way in which they conduct the news. Sometimes it's a real serious issue in Argentina. And then the next minute, it's videos of dogs jumping from things. And for me,
same goes for radio. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of, it kills me. I love long form journalism. But of course, I studied it, and I love storytelling. But for me to have again like 90 seconds of world news, it's kind of like you're really gonna make your country ignorant if you only tell them you can't tell Syria in 90 seconds. It's impossible. And so these things, it's like how, I don't know if it's because it's more nationalistic, that they focus on Argentina news and not elsewhere.
I don't know if this applies to other societies when it comes to... No, I know for a fact that other societies are more interested in world affairs. But traditionally here, I mean, the world affairs, you have to be like a super educator. It's very educated people with university degrees. That kind of public is the minority that is interested in world news in the way world news are consumed in other parts of the world. But compared to other Latin Americans, Argentines are far better informed. There is an interest and there is a general knowledge, very shallow, I would say, because of this scant coverage they give to serious issues like Syria, for example, like the Syrian conflict, which are very difficult to grasp for Latin America. It's like, I mean, trying to explain Peronism to a foreigner who just arrived here, who's just watching the news and following the Premier League report and try to explain Peronism in 90 minutes. Yeah. You can't do
exactly.
that. Not even in an hour. You yeah. can't do that. And how you explain, I don't know, the Middle East conflict. Mm. It's difficult. But do people have time for that? I mean, that's a question. I mean, I'm interested in. I'm having this discussion with media people these days. Do we have to adapt to the public? Shouldn't we? Because, I mean, times are changing. And if we are putting a barrier, like, I know this, and this is what you should know.
Yeah.
How can you be this ignorant and not know that Damascus is the capital of Syria? do I have to do that? I'm not so sure.
I don't know. Okay, I'll take an example. In the UK, the two leading newspapers is The Sun and The Daily Mail. Both incredibly scandalous, yellow journal, racist, fascist. I mean,
sexist.
Every name under the sun when it comes to being bad journalism, that's there. And they were like, well, no, but we follow what the public want. And I was like, I don't know. It's like saying if you look at any organization, right. if you're a doctor working in a hospital, or if you're a banker, would you just, yes, you have to follow to the public to a certain degree, but end day, you're responsible for them as well.
Yeah.
And to me, it's the media is an educational tool. It's not something that we should just go, okay, everyone wants to know about the most ridiculous scandal, or I'm sorry to say again, the YouTube video of some puppies.
Yeah.
It's like, come on. I mean, journalism is there to, you know, like the BBC always said, educate and inform. You know, that's what it's supposed to do. And for me, if we take that away, we are really demolishing democracy.
I agree. No, I mean, now you convince me.
Okay.
But in an hour, I'm going to be unconvinced because I am having these doubts. Mm. But I mean, what you say is totally true. Mm. Yeah, you just can't just be, that would be like populist, an informational populist. No, this is what the people want. So we give them crap.
Exactly.
Without. Yeah, that's true. That is also a valid argument. Mm. Absolutely. So, well, the plans for the future, maybe moving to Tanzania,
where they've also got media problems. They've also got media problems.
I'm sure they have.
Unfortunately, new government and new clampdown on media freedoms again. So it'll be an exciting journey, but a challenging one. So,
well, Suzanne, this has been a pleasure and very interesting discussion. It's always a pleasure to meet a citizen of the world, somebody who has a perspective of things after being in several countries. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me.
That was Suzanne Harris on Rai Argentina to the World. She's from Malawi, raised in the UK, studied in Hong Kong, married to an Argentine.